Hello and welcome to From Sickness to Health. My name is Tom, your host for today. And our topic for today is corona and coronary. What's the connection? We have a very special guest with us today, Dr. Eric Walsh. Dr. Eric Walsh, introduce yourself to our audience.
Well, I was actually born here in Hartford in Connecticut. I'm a practicing physician here. I did my medical school training in Florida at the University of Miami. But probably my most profitable and beneficial health education really came in my master's and doctorate in public health at Loma Linda University in Southern California. And I've worked in public health for the government on the federal level all the way down to the local level, and really am fascinated by what's happening with this pandemic right now and understanding how a healthy lifestyle will help to mitigate the impact of this pandemic on us as individuals and on society as a whole.
Okay, so obviously, you're aware of the corona problem. It is current. It's what's going on right now. But the number one killer in the United States is heart disease, and it's the number one killer worldwide. So is there a connection?
You know, it's interesting. When you look at it, there's a fascinating little YouTube video of a little Puerto Rican girl who makes the connection back through the Latin of the corona and coronary, in that the reason we call this the coronavirus is because it looks like one of the layers of the sun, like the crowning layer of the sun. The same reason we named the coronary arteries, because the way that the arteries sit on top of the heart almost looks like a crown on the heart. So it connects in the sense that it kind of has a similar etymology. But here's where it really gets fascinating. Probably the most devastating aspect of this virus is going to not even be its physical impact, as terrible as that's going to be. Probably the most devastating impact of this virus and this pandemic is going to be on the emotional health of the world, of the entire world.
And why do you think that is?
Because the media has really done a good job of warning us, but in that process, what we have is not simply a pandemic, it's a panic-demic.
Okay.
And so we are watching people really in some ways gutturally overreact to the risk by doing things like hoarding toilet paper, hoarding hand sanitizer. Even fights have broken out in stores over supplies. So once you see that, you're literally pushing people to where you would think the next step is martial law. We're clearly not there yet. Hopefully not even ever going to get there. But people are beginning to behave like there's an apocalypse at hand from a public health standpoint when there is not.
Okay.
And that's very stressful.
So for you as a public health official, not just a medical doctor, but the understanding the science of public health through your education, what can you share with the public on this point with regards to this overall, with the drama that we're going through on this point?
Well, first let me start by debunking any ideas that this is not a real threat. It is a real threat. I think when it's finally all over with the case fatality rate, which means how many people per exposure die of the disease, is actually going to be smaller than we've thought. I think that number is going to keep coming down. When you look at how many people in America have tested positive, you could argue that 10 times, for every person test positive, 10 people haven't been tested and have the virus. So the death rate is going to come down. But it doesn't mean somebody's not going to get sick and die. People absolutely will. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, once you understand the science, you do understand how to protect yourself. This is a droplet infection. So that means that the virus has to actually exist in little tiny bubbles of mucus, saliva, whatever it is that's coming out of the body. And when it comes out, it has to hit you and get you in your mucous membranes or on your hands. And you've got to put your hands to your mucous membranes. That is a lot to understand. Once you understand that, there's a bit of protection. Long before you get into medicines or vaccines or herbs or any other treatments, there is a physical barrier that can exist. Hence the demand for masks. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much the person wearing the mask protects themselves from everybody else, but the person with the symptoms wearing the mask protects everyone else. Mm-hmm. So someone with symptoms who puts on a mask can actually protect anyone else in the room, because now they can't get the droplets on anyone. With that said, there's a lot to do with surfaces, and you could read, papers like 4 to 5 days, metal surfaces that last longer. It can actually circulate in the air for up to 3-4 hours, I think is the last thing I've read. So clean, wiping down surfaces, doorknobs, kitchen counters, bathrooms, anywhere where people, would go and touch is important. That's a big part of it. So, and then the social distance is one of the reasons people say 6 feet apart.
Okay. So, and just help clarify, why would it live differently on one surface material as opposed to another?
Because of how long a droplet can last on a surface. So if it's like paper, paper's going to absorb the moisture, the virus is going to dry out. Metal, it's not. The droplet was not going to absorb in. That droplet can last much longer on a metal surface because it won't absorb and dry out and so forth. So, you know, the different surfaces matter. Clothes matter. So if you happen to go, like, you know, for me who works in the medical field, still sees patients, it's really important when I get home to take off the clothes that I've been in around patients and make sure they get washed right away, take a shower right away, you know, and try and kind of stay clean. It's interesting, during the bubonic plague and during the Dark Ages, it was the Jews who survived the best. Mm-hmm. And part of that was because of the ceremonial hand washing that we read about Jesus kind of arguing with the Pharisees and Sadducees about. But that ceremonial hand washing actually protected them against that plague. Okay. So there are things that you can do to protect you, even in the middle of a pandemic, to make it so that your risk comes down.
Okay. Now, this is a flu virus. It's a variant of a flu virus?
It's a coronavirus. The flu is influenza. Coronavirus is actually akin to the common cold. The common cold is a coronavirus. SARS was a coronavirus. MERS, Mediterranean, the Mediterranean version of it that was out in the 2000s, also a coronavirus. Flu is a little different, but it works similarly. Okay. They're usually seasonal, and it spreads similarly.
Okay. So how come we're not reacting the same way with just the regular flu? I mean, when people are coming to get a patient, somebody who's been identified, and I see them in the pictures in the press, they're all decked out in garbs and bubbles and putting people in bubbles. We don't do that with the flu. We don't do that with a regular cold. So what's...
And what's interesting is in hindsight, maybe if we're this afraid of this, we should, because the CDC put out the statements this year for how many people will die from the flu. And they're estimating somewhere around 30,000 to 50,000 Americans might die from the flu this year. And I believe it was Americans and not the world, Americans. So when you look at that, we probably won't get anywhere near that with this coronavirus. Okay. So you make a good point. And, you know, I don't know why we are reacting so strongly to this and not to the rest of it. And I think it's part of why there's a lot of people scratching their head around this. There was one German epidemiologist, virologist, who said that normally we would dovetail this in with the rest of all of the flus and coronaviruses for the season. And because of that, you wouldn't see the variation wouldn't be quite as big. One of the things that's scary from a public health standpoint is it's new, it's novel. That's why they use the word novel. It's new. We've never seen this before. So we have no vaccines. We're not sure how it behaves. And so if you've watched, the symptomology has, how we define the symptomology has evolved. So at first it was cough, dry cough, fever, shortness of breath. Now it's dry cough, fever, shortness of breath, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, loss of smell or taste, and headache, and it's fever. It's going to keep evolving like that as we learn more about it. We now know that up to 10% of people will present with stomach symptoms like nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. We know that a smaller percent is going to present with loss of smell or loss of taste. Because we don't know about the virus, that's what's so scary. Mm-hmm. And that's partly why you get this massive reaction to it, because what if it mutates and it switches, and instead of what I believe it'll end at like a 0.8, 0.7 case fatality rate, it jumps and it's 5, mm-hmm. right? Then we're in trouble because our system wouldn't be able to handle it. So that's partly why we're afraid of it. It's just because it's new. And I think some of it, unfortunately, is a little bit of it, at least, is a bit of the media really liking the story.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Who's most at risk for coronavirus?
Well, anybody can get it. But ironically, in most of the world, in China, which is interesting, it was really the elderly. In one country, and I think Italy, the average age of those who died is like 85 or 86. In America, it's different. For some reason in the United States, 20 to 54-year-olds are absorbing a larger proportion of those who are getting seriously ill or dying than in the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. No one has an idea. Now, I have some theories, and that has to do with the standard American diet, probably the fact that more of us are smoking not just tobacco, but marijuana, vaping, you know, other things that can affect the lung. Maybe one day we'll be able to parse this out epidemiologically and figure out what risk factors might connect back to getting this disease more severely. But anyone is at risk. And in the United States, really, you can't count anybody out. The ones who seem to be most protected so far are the younger ones, so children. But anybody can get it, and anyone, people of all ages have gotten very sick. And many people say they had no health risks, and yet they've gotten sick. That's anecdotal. Overall, it's still people over 75 years of age that would get the most sick, or people with heart disease, lung disease, cancer, immunosuppression, those types of things.
Okay, so we've you've talked about some of the symptoms. What can you do then to prevent it? Is there any cost-effective measures? Obviously, we've been instructed from day one, wash your hands, coughing into your sleeve rather than, you know, just out into thin air. But what else is there for preventive or natural health?
So, like you said, the first is distance and kind of like physical barrier type protection, wiping down surfaces, putting on gloves, masks, stuff like that. But from that, then you say, what do we know? Now, I caution people, because one of the things that happens in a crisis like this, people begin to sell products. Mm-hmm. And right now, if you wanted to start a line of supplements that boost the immune system, if you put nothing in it, it would sell right now.
Okay.
So people have to be careful buying a whole bunch of supplements and products, because people are going to try to make money right now off of you. So that's the first rule. What we know works are whole foods. And so if you want to use, I see people talk about like elderberry and garlic. Those are perfectly, perfectly good solutions. Onions, mushrooms, button mushrooms specifically, but eat them whole. You don't need to have people try and pull out mineral or one extract from it, or, you know, one phytonutrient. Eat the whole food. Mm-hmm. Because in every food, there are compounds that man has still yet to discover that work synergistically with, for example, vitamin C, to make a whole orange more protective for your immune system than just vitamin C by itself.
Okay.
So the whole kiwi, the whole orange, to get your vitamin C. That's the first thing. Eat whole foods. Mm-hmm. What do we know from there? We know that the darker, the less oxidative the food. You cut an apple in half and put it down, it turns brown. You cut blueberries in half and set them down, nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because blueberries are far more concentrated with antioxidants. Specifically, there's a chemical in dark berries like dark blueberries, blackberries, dark grapes called resveratrol. There have been studies that have been done that show that they shorten the length of viral illnesses.
Hmm.
So one of the things I'm telling all of my patients is make sure if you like smoothies, this is the time to make blackberry, blueberry smoothies. Eat dark grapes. Don't drink the wine. Don't drink the dark wine. Alcohol is not protective. In fact, it might be damaging in this situation. But the resveratrol in the foods, dark leafy greens, also the same principle. Don't brown very easily and are full of phytonutrients.
Mm-hmm.
And you need the gestalt.
Mm-hmm.
So people are saying, I know I want probiotics to fight against this virus. The best probiotic God gave at the time when he sent man out of the garden, he gave them the food that the animals were eating, which is the herb of the field, which are vegetables and root foods. Vegetables, leafy green vegetables like collard greens, spinach, callaloo in Jamaica, all of these dark, dark leafy greens, kale, bok choy. These things are rich and will literally boost your immune system. And here's the thing. People think I need more of an immune system. You don't want more of an immune system. You want an effective immune system, an efficient immune system. More of an immune system is how you get autoimmune disorders.
Okay.
An efficient immune system is going to be able to tell what is your body separate from what is an antigen from outside of your body, like this virus.
Okay.
So you want to be eating those kinds of foods. What you want to avoid, it's really cheap to do this, sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Snickers bars, honey buns, Twinkies, white bread on a Big Mac, French fries, white rice, all of that stuff just is sugar. Sodas, soda pop, iced, sweetened iced teas. And here's why that's dangerous. Every time your blood sugar level rises, your white blood cells go to sleep
mm-hmm.
for up to 6 to 8 hours. This is one of the reasons why diabetics have so much more infection than everyone else. So in a time of when infection is widespread, the last thing you want to do is turn down your immune system by putting your white blood cells to sleep. So I highly advise against that. The second thing is, if this disease is pro-inflammatory, this virus, if you listen carefully to what they're saying, it causes fibrosis of the lungs, a honeycombing of the lungs, and a very strange pattern. That's why the cough is dry and its infection is deep respiratory, lower respiratory. So you do not want to eat things that are going to make you make more mucus or be pro-inflammatory. What foods do that? Dairy products, mm-hmm. milk, cheese, butter, those foods that come from cows, goats, or other animals you get them from, those foods are pro-inflammatory. They look like antigens to us, so we make more mucus. You do not want to be eating those foods at this time. You really shouldn't eat those foods ever. Cheese, all those foods are bad foods in general. So you want to eliminate those animal products. And then from there, you want to make sure even like the meat products you eat, which kind of acidifies the blood, it's not good for your immune system either. You want to be more alkaline. And you don't need to buy special alkaline water and do all that. The water that you get from natural, whole, raw fruits and vegetables is the purest water on the planet. And every time you bite lettuce, you bite an apple, it's full of water. Mm-hmm. An apple is like 80% water by weight. So it's the best water you can consume. So in this time to stay hydrated and keep yourself healthy, eat plenty of fruits and vegetables. Do away with the processed foods, because the processed foods all hit your immune system on some level. Some of them even have confounding factors in that these foods have chemicals and preservatives that actually are damaging to the system as well.
Okay. So very exciting what you're sharing here about food and how it supplements and boosts our immunity or strengthens the immunity, makes it more effective, really. And yet at the same time, it doesn't mean that participating in this type of a lifestyle diet plan is going to, we're going to be totally ignored by it. It's just that it makes our body more efficient if we were to touch that surface.
Absolutely.
And touch our mucous membranes, that if we were to get it, our white blood cells are ready, standing at attention, rather than sleeping in the guardhouse.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Those button mushrooms I mentioned earlier, the study shows, and there are other foods that do this, what they do is they actually increase the amount of immunoglobulin A, which is one of the antibodies actually in the mucous membrane. So if you get exposed to the virus, it grabs it. And there are other foods that do that if in the fruit and vegetable world of food. This is relevant because what you're finding with this disease is one person gets it and gets incredibly sick in their 40s. Another person gets it and barely has a symptom. And I think you're going to find when we really parse this out is there may be a genetic component for sure. But I think you're also going to find that there are certain things that if you do more of, they're protective, and certain things you do more of and they're not. And if you just look at the whole rest of the health world, we know that the less animal product you consume, the less processed foods you consume, the more whole foods you consume, the healthier you're going to be, the better you're going to fend off infection. To the point of an efficient immune system, I have met many people who have reversed diseases like lupus simply by going to a whole food plant-based diet. Okay. And that's an overactive immune system. So I really strongly encourage those who are listening to really eat good whole foods forever, but definitely during this pandemic.
Sure, sure. Now, just jumping back to our theme, corona, coronary, how does diet, a person who's trying to make lifestyle changes to improve their coronary health, that should strengthen them naturally for coronavirus?
So let me say this. Definitely that would be the case. One of the things I would throw in there, though, is that this is also a time to mitigate and manage stress.
Okay.
And that is probably the biggest connection between these two things. There are studies that show people who are under stress, if they eat the same diet, the one that is under stress will actually have more atherosclerotic progression or plaque formation than the one who is unstressed. Mm-hmm. So actual stress, and this is why you see some people are they try to be so healthy, but if they carry, and here's the thing, if you carry guilt and shame and regret and remorse in your life, it is a burden of stress that you carry. This is one of the reasons I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian because I can let go of those things. Mm. And trusting God actually allows you to be able to liberate yourself from those things that will weigh you down physically and cause disease. Mm-hmm. America is a stressful place. And imagine adding to this now, this pandemic and the lockdown that we're all under. People's stress levels are going up. When your stress levels go up, your catecholamines go up, like adrenaline, and all of that, you know, it races your heart. We're all in a constant state of fight or flight. Man was not designed by God to stay in this constant state of fight or flight. That will wear you out and cause you to have more heart attacks, more strokes, and the like. I mean, there's a whole bunch we could talk on just that topic. So we have to mitigate stress. How do you mitigate stress? Be prepared. Mm-hmm. Clean your surfaces. You do the social distancing. Eat the right diet. But in the final analysis, you're going to have to turn this all over to God.
Okay.
You're going to have to trust your higher power, as many in the world would say. Because if you don't do that, the stress and worry about this virus may actually kill you and you never even get the virus.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Walsh, for being our guest today. We're going to maintain our social distance. And this wraps it up for this afternoon's presentation of From Sickness to Health. Again, our topic today, corona and coronary, what's the connection? We're going to have you back again. Thank you.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.